Hello, everyone. On today's program, we are going to be taking a deep dive into the chilling reality of neural warfare, where cutting-edge technologies threaten to breach the last bastion of human autonomy. From mind-reading devices capable of deciphering our innermost thoughts to the ominous specter of pre-crime surveillance, we confront this question: are your thoughts, even today, in 2024, are they safe? I'm Zach Drew. Welcome to the show. It's been said that a man's mind is his last sanctuary. If they learn how to get in there, we will truly be in a dark age. So for today's program, some articles for consideration to set the stage, lay the foundation. Mind reading devices are revealing the brain's secrets. That's nature.com. National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System, it's called NNCSS. That is from the Center for Disease Control. That's CDC.gov right there. Actually, let's read a little bit of that. Neurological disorders and conditions have substantial and sometimes devastating consequences for millions of people of all ages across the United States. To help address this problem, Congress authorized Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to initiate, develop, and of a National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System. The CDC received appropriated funds for the NNCSS starting in the fiscal year of 2019. Another article about the Brain Initiative. Now, this is from the official Obama White House archives. Once again, another .gov website. So basically, this one just quickly states, in April 2013, former President Barack Obama announced the launch of the Brain Initiative. And that brain there stands for Brain Research Through Advancing Innovative Neurotechnologies. It's a bold new initiative focused on revolutionizing our understanding of the human brain. So top neuroscientists developed a 12-year research strategy for the National Institutes of Health, that's NIH, to achieve the goals of the initiative by 2025. Next article for consideration on today's program. AI makes non-invasive mind reading possible by turning thoughts into text. And the last article, we're not going to get into it right now, but it will be an article of focus for sure on today's program, and probably more on next program as well. Mind reading technology may be used for national security. Okay, so it is your mind. It is your mind. It's your mind. It's your mind. It is right here. Okay. That is the gold that they want. You know, think about like the California gold rush, right? The discovery of gold at Sutter's Mill on January 24th, 1848. It unleashed what? The largest migration in U.S. history. The next year, hundreds of thousands of people, known as what? The 49ers, stormed the state, searching for that precious, precious commodity, the wealth, the power from data, the data that they can harvest from your mind. I've said it before 100 times, and please understand that I'm going to say it 100 more times. Data is the new oil. Also, know this, that data is food for AI. Take away data from AI, and it becomes non-existent. It ceases to exist. All right, so the food for AI is data, and they are mining you and I like coal right now. They're probably spying on. No, they are. They're collecting all of your data. You have no privacy. And they're using it, they're selling it to third parties, and they're making billions and billions and billions of dollars in this age of surveillance capitalism, okay? Humans and their digital experiences, thoughts and feelings, and our behavioral patterns Okay, they're mining it all. Every single time you open up any type of IoT device, they're harvesting you, your behavioral data. We are, right now, human beings are the greatest natural resource on earth to the kings of the earth. And the kings of the earth today are the technology oligarchs. They are the tech elite. Those are who run this world. Shoshana Zuboff, the author of The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, said this in her book. Nearly every product or service that begins with the word smart or personalized, every internet-enabled device, every digital assistant is simply a supply chain interface for the unobstructed flow of behavioral data on its way to predicting our futures in a surveillance economy. So surveillance capitalism, she writes, unilaterally claims human experience as free, raw material for translation into behavioral data. So I want to move on to point two to just, you know, take the hammer and keep nailing this nail deeper and deeper. Something we need to talk about is this: freedom of thought. Your thoughts. Freedom of thought is not directly protected as a right in the United States, okay? You know, instead, U.S. First Amendment law, it protects a range of rights that may allow thoughts to be expressed, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, what have you. And why would thoughts be protected, right? I mean, protected from what? Who could read one's mind anyway? That would have had to have been the thought if this question was posed to any of our founding fathers when writing the Constitution. Why would we need to protect thoughts? That's the most ridiculous thing. Like, that's silly. So let me make this clear. U.S. constitutional law provides no direct protection as of right now for freedom of thought. And why this is not okay is the day is coming, and please listen to me. You can mark me down as that crazy mad scientist warning the world of doom every day. I don't care. The day is coming sooner rather than later where brain-to-computer interfaces, referred to as BCI, in the same fashion that smartphones have been democratized to the world, BCIs will. The handheld phone you are carrying, your cell phone, your iPhone, your Android, the same way everybody, I don't care if you're in the most rural areas of Africa, you have a smartphone today. BCIs in my lifetime will be democratized in the same way cell phones have. Okay? Now, I want to take a look at this article that was published in a law journal by legal experts John and Leslie Francis. The article was called this, Freedom of Thought in the United States. The First Amendment, Marketplace of Ideas, and the Internet. Let's read a few paragraphs from this article. The U.S. First Amendment does not address what might be characterized as the inner sanctum of free thought, the ability of individuals to exercise robust autonomy in the ideas they formulate, entertain, and believe. Instead, the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution protects residents against governmental interference with a list of freedoms, the free exercise of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, the right to assemble peaceably, and the right to petition government for redress of grievances. Each of these rights bears a clear relationship to freedom of thought. For example, protecting free exercise of religion allows people to worship in accord with their religious beliefs. Together, these rights would appear to provide extensive protection for the manifestation of thoughts in the world. Neither separately nor together, however, do they directly protect thoughts themselves. Against this backdrop, the internet brings further challenges to freedom of thought in the U.S., ever present in the world in which U.S. First Amendment doctrines are continued to develop. The internet remains largely unauthorized in U.S. jurisprudence. Okay, and by the way, jurisprudence is just, it's a term that means the study, knowledge, or philosophy, like the science of law. So in other words, they're saying that there hasn't been enough general agreed interpretation in the legal community concerning the rights of your own thoughts and their constitutional protections on the internet. Meaning right now, it's free game. It's like the Wild West, okay? Let's continue with this article. To engage fully in freedom of thought requires context for reflection, exposure, to inform, to information and ideas, and protection from pressures about how to think. The internet poses particular challenges to reflection of this fuller kind. Aggregating data from many sources, such as people's internet searches or social media posts, may reveal what people might be thinking, even when they do not fully recognize it themselves. Hidden methods for altering or faking apparent facts or sources to destabilize reliance on information, and other technological developments such as neuroimaging or remote sensing pretend far fuller abilities to uncover the privacy of the mind. So this thing, I mean, it was a massive article. We're not going to get into it. Basically, they made the case. Right now, as it stands, even with the technology that's been developed right now, such as neuroimaging and remote sensing and many other technologies, the thoughts within your mind are not explicitly protected by the U.S. Constitution. And other, you know, other countries, like, for example, like Chile has already rewritten their constitution to give Nero rights, all right? This is something that we must have, and we must have very soon here in America. And by the way, whenever it talks about Nero imaging in this law journal, one example of neuroimaging, I just put in my notes, I wanted to give an example. Publishing the results, BioRxiv, in March 2023, one Japan-based research group utilized the text-to-image generative software, it's called Stable Diffusion, to generate de novo images from fMRI scans. So once again, this is an example of neuroimaging that this article is referring to. Stable Diffusion is trained on a bank of images with text descriptions. It can then draw from the bank of examples to create de novo image based on any given prompt. So, what did they do? The team trained the algorithm with an online data set of brain scans for four individuals who each viewed 10,000 images. So, all right, say you have a control group, four people, and these four people look at these 10,000 images, and they're watching what their brain does, okay? Once trained, the algorithm was tested on a new set of brain scans, the goal being to create the image the individual originally viewed. So utilizing the patterns of brain activity, predominantly those from the that part of the brain, a region associated with registering image layout and perception, the algorithm could recreate an abstract version of the image in question, yet it struggled to form more concrete, recognizable objects. So basically it's just saying, hey, they realized what the brain was doing, how the neurons were firing, how they were tracing in the brain, and then they had their four subjects think of certain images, and based on the activity they saw in the brain, the algorithm was able to suggest what they were looking at and actually even draw in an abstract way the things that they were looking at. All right, let's keep going with this, because we got a case to build. We gotta keep going with this. So the government side of freedom of thought. So there's an ever-growing list of brain activity monitoring technologies, agencies, and programs which have given rise to the notion of using what comes out of, well, basically this comes out of all of these ventures, which is mind reading abilities, and how they could be used for national security threat prevention via pre-crime surveillance. You know, England breaks their own privacy laws to solve pre-crime cases. And I know that America does too, but it's interesting. England does, and we know because they actually just recently unintentionally exposed this. And I didn't even know this happened until I was surfing the net and I heard it on one of the Joe Rogan Experience, podcasts, which by the way, like I guess Joe Rogan has like the largest podcast in all of the world. But yeah, so they break their own privacy laws. But just take a listen to this.
But I didn't do anything.
But you might have.
Yeah.
Or they'll tell you were going to. We know. We have predictive technology.
Predictive technology. Well, like, oh yeah, that movie Minority Report.
Yes. That seemed so impossible.
Predicting murders,
now
though.
Now it's like the World Economic Forum guy was saying that they won't have to have elections in the future.
Wow.
That we will be able to predict with such precision that we don't
save
need
a lot of
elections.
Money, though.
Did you see this story?
British
man acquitted over London, Spain flight bomb hoax.
He texted and Snapchat to his friends, "I'm on the way to blow up the plane. I'm a member of the Taliban." Then,
oh my God,
the Spanish.
As a joke? God.
As a joke. He said a joke to his friends. That's a good bit. And then two Spanish F-18s were scrambled to.
Look how close the F-18 is to that other jet's very wing. Close. That's insane.
He was just acquitted, though, because the judge was like, there's obviously no threat here. But what was curious is how the message was found, because Snapchat's supposed to be encrypted. And some people think it's because of the Wi-Fi network at the airport. And the airport says that's not how it was. And then the UK authorities said, where was it right here?
So is this evidence of some new technology?
That I mean, as you guys were saying this stuff, that's why I brought it up.
Do you think that's what they're, what are you interpreting this as?
They said that they have, there it is. For unknown reasons, it was captured by the security mechanisms of England when the plane was flying over French airspace.
Yo.
Wow.
Yo, that's crazy. The message was made in a strictly private environment between the accused and his friends with whom he flew. Through a private group to which only they have access. So the accused could not even remotely assume that the joke he played on his friends could be intercepted or detected by British services, nor by third parties other than his friends who received the message.
So that is pre-crime prevention with decrypting messages and decrypting the messages on physical devices for private platforms. Now, let's continue with the pre-crime narrative by taking a look at this article. Mind reading technology may be used for national security. Let's go down in the article right there to, there we go. During a 2006 congressional discussion regarding the Electronic Surveillance Modernization Act, which was aimed at greatly expanding U.S. government surveillance powers, Pete Howextra, Republican member of the House Intelligence Committee, spoke to the concept of using emerging technologies in the realm of intention understanding to scan the public for potential terroristic thoughts. Our country needs to rapidly and effectively bring every intelligence tool to bear to find our enemies, detect and understand their intentions, and thwart their hostile and terrorist acts against our country and our people, Howextra said. Well, now they wouldn't invade our privacy like that. They have, and they do. At this time in the show, I would like to venture off into a little bit of a history lesson on that. So, in 1917 and 1918, right after World War I began, the great influenza struck in America and throughout the world. The Spanish flu of 1918, as it is sometimes called, killed as many as 100 million people worldwide and infected as many as 500 million worldwide. Basically, biblical proportion, because at that time, that was 1/4 of the world. It all originated in Haskell County, Kansas, when a few got sick and then traveled to a huge military base just east of them at Camp Funston, located at Fort Riley, southwest of Manhattan, Kansas, and then to the battlefront in Europe. The Great Influenza, the book I have it here. I've read the whole book. I've got it highlighted. It looks crazy with all my inserts. On page 95, the author says this: as sparsely populated and isolated as Haskell was, the virus infecting the county might well have died there, might well have failed to spread to the outside world. That would be so, except for one thing. This was wartime. And one thing that we have learned from history is that war spreads disease. War often leads to famine, and war spreads disease. During this time, because of the Espionage Act, the New Sedition Act, and the formation of the APL, Americans were scared to say anything anti-government, anti-war or anything less than enthusiastically patriotic. So the Espionage Act of 1917 is a United States federal law passed on June 15, 1917, shortly after the U.S. entry into World War I. It has been amended numerous times over the years, but what it did, it was censorship of the press like never seen before. Then, at the same time, the new Sedition Act. At that time, this is crazy. This happened. I mean, a lot of people, people that don't know history, they just don't know what happened. It made it punishable in the United States of America by up to 20 years in jail to utter or to print or to write or to publish any disloyal, profane, or abusive language about the government of the United States. 20 years. This wasn't just for press. This was for just average Joe citizens. One could go to jail for cursing the government or criticizing it, even if what one said was true. Insert COVID-19 thoughts, insert the jab, insert what have you, right? Anything that the conservative right would say, if the leadership of the Democratic Party has the White House, they're gonna say whatever it is, it's whatever you're saying is lies, it's false. I mean, think about the power that the government had with this. The newspapers. Oh, and by the way, that wasn't just a bluff, okay? There were many people actually sentenced and imprisoned for over 20 years for that very thing. One of them was a sitting congressman. All right, and just know, as far as history goes, that the newspapers could have told the truth, all right? They could have saved tens of millions of lives, but how could they report on it and risk the potential of going to jail for 20 years? How could they report on it and keep the morale up? And also another little interesting tidbit before I keep going on. Spain was neutral during World War I and didn't censor its news. So when the virus hit Spain and people started dying, they actually reported on it. So even though they were not the culprit, they took the blame throughout the world. It's not funny, but it is. I mean, that's why, the disease that killed 100 million people, that's a Spanish flu. And they're like, what the heck? We were just reporting on it. And the fact is, it wasn't Spain. So it really should not be called the Spanish flu. And that's why I try to refer to it more often than not as the Great Influenza. But then, after that, it was the Espionage Act, the New Sedition Act, and then it was the APL. To enforce these things came the creation of the APL, which was the American Protective League, a volunteer-based organization sponsored by the United States Department of Justice. Okay, it made up 90,000 members within just a few months, and 200,000 within a year. So now they were required to carry badges identifying them as Secret Service. What was their goal? They spied on their neighbors, investigated slackers, right, and food hoarders. They demanded to know why people didn't buy or even didn't buy more Liberty bonds. And they would attack or turn in anybody that was against the war. So once again, fear to say anything anti-war or anti-government had been thoroughly instilled into the American public by this moment. Even during this time, Americans were encouraged to treat every German or Austrian in the United States, unless known by years and years of association as a spy. States outlawed the teaching of German at this time, while one Iowa politician even warned that 90% of all the men and women who teach the German language are traitors. Sauerkraut was even renamed during this time period Liberty Cabbage, right? Sauerkraut was even named Liberty Cabbage. So I say all that to say this. Can you imagine what the government could have done with mind-reading technology? Technology that they are developing, and I believe has been developed. But they could have done in 1970, 1918, during wartime, and the real pandemic that actually happened. If they were empowered by things like the New Sedition Act, they wouldn't even have any need at all for the American Protective League. Does the Bible talk about any more wars coming, any more pandemics coming? What could they do with this technology? You know, the combination of state surveillance and the capitalist counterpart means that digital technology is separating the citizens of the world, of all societies, into two groups. The watchers, you know, the elite, the invisible, unknown, whether they're unknown, I'll tell you, they're unaccountable. The watchers and the watched. It's a new paint on this old Marxism and cultural Marxism barn, where it was the have and the have-nots, and we're moving into a world where it is the watchers and the watched. The Antichrist system is being built right now. It is. Now, I want to say this, as many of you know, I hold to what is called historic premillennialism. I believe we have to go through what is referred to as that the time of tribulation and apostasy. I believe to go through it. I'm more so covenantal than you would refer to as dispensational. I'm a historic premillennialist, meaning I believe it's time to buckle up. The Antichrist system is being built right now. Here's a little graphic of historic premillennialism. So we have here Jesus' birth. And then from that point into the ascension, it was the kingdom of God being manifest. And then once he ascended, it's the kingdom which has remained through the Holy Spirit. That's where we are right now. Then we have that last time period. Apostasy and tribulation break out. And at the end of that is the return of Christ, which is the first resurrection. Then the millennium. And in that millennium, you see beneath there, it's where I believe that Satan is bound and the kingdom is consummated. And then there's a short time period where Satan is loose and massive rebellion led by Gog and Magog. And the final judgment, the second resurrection, and the new heaven and the new earth. This is historic premillennialism. It's what a lot of our early church fathers believed. So basically, and it's not a salvation issue that you believe that there are multiple comings of the Lord and raptured out in the sky. So I'm not a pre-tribulation theorist. I'm not. But I absolutely believe that all of these things, most of all of these things we've talked about, are going to happen even before that apostasy and tribulation break out. Like, all the tech is going to be developed. It's going to be waiting in there. And we talk about, you know, I don't have time because we're already, gosh, I only have, oh my gosh, I'm actually totally out of time. Well, too bad I only had about 75 more minutes of content. Okay, so we're gonna actually open up Revelation chapter 6 next week and go through those first four horsemen. And we're going to be talking about nanoparticles being released throughout the world to fake another virus that have been developed. And we have very, you know, professors from Ivy League schools talking about what has been developed, what could be released throughout the whole nation to fake another pandemic. I swear I'm going to get canceled. I swear I'm just, if you come to the show next week and we're not on YouTube, you gotta find us on Rumble, right? We're actually, you know, we don't have a lot of problem on Facebook, surprisingly, but Rumble. You need to get on Rumble. We're on faithandvalues.com. We're on Roku and Apple TV through the PTL television network. Then we're in several different markets throughout America on that platform. So you need to find us because we are not gonna be staying on YouTube for much longer. And so I wanted to let you know, I'm totally out of time and, you know, I feel like I'm great at flying the plane, but who in the world knows how to land these things? So with that being said, I love you guys. We got a lot of content planned for next week, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.